KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say.
Welcome to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're going to be having a very important discussion about the issues of the intersection of trans rights with disability rights and how both can become overlapping intersectional identities of erasure. My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Carter and I use they, them pronouns.
And my name is Nicolette. I use also they, them, or AM pronouns.
Carter, so I received a report recently that you have experienced discrimination and trans erasure.
Yeah, so I started having a seizure disorder 2 years ago. And during that time, I was homeless and 17. And paramedics, they would misgender me. I lived in a transitional housing program through New Avenues for Youth, as well as I went to SMRC, the Sexuality and Gender Youth Minority Resource Center, and that's where a lot of the problems I faced happened, were in these groups. And paramedics, they would purposely misgender me. They would attack my gender identity, telling me that I was born a girl, that's all I'm gonna be is a girl. And then after a while, I was having multiple seizures a day, and they would come in clumps of about 5 to 8, and I was having about 100 seizures a day in the beginning. And paramedics would be called, and they would make fun of my gender. They would laugh at me. I would have panic attacks because of the mistreatment around both my gender identity as well as me being newly disabled, never having a seizure before, and then having hundreds a day. And over the past 2 years, the abuse has just been this awful cycle of trying to go out into the community, having these seizures. Community members scared and calling 911, and then I would be attacked for everything all over again. And sometimes this would happen multiple times a day. because I would just try to live my life. And in the past couple of months, they have twisted my legs. I am unable to use my legs, not because they are paralyzed, but because I have a neurological disorder that is still unknown with what's going on with my legs. But they believe it is functional neurological disorder, which just means that there's a miscommunication happening from my brain to the rest of my body. And so these paramedics had been picking me up and twisting my legs and purposely dropping me to show that I was faking, that I could stand, that I was just like choosing not to stand. Because I had fallen out of my wheelchair during the seizures. And so they would try to pick me up and force me to stand. And during these, I also have no way to communicate because I cannot talk after seizures. And I cannot talk now for up to 2 hours after a seizure. And that's about it. The cycle of abuse has just happened for a very long time, and I'm kind of tired of it. I want it to stop, and I want to bring attention to the mistreatment by trans and disabled youth specifically face regarding paramedics, because I'm not the only one that this happens to.
Thank you.
Well, that is just absolutely heartbreaking to hear, and I'm really sorry that that's happened to you. I want to say real quick, I love your kitten. It's adorable.
Thank you. His name is Shark.
Oh. I have my cat next to me too, but he's, you know, big 6-year-old cat. Anyway, yeah, like I was saying, that is just absolutely heartbreaking to hear. And it shocks me that, you know, healthcare workers are willing to be so abusive to disabled trans people. I mean, I'm also a disabled trans person as well. But I don't know if maybe it's because a lot of my disabilities aren't as severe, but I haven't been as badly treated, at least for my gender identity. I have definitely had my own challenges in the healthcare system. You know, I have to misgender myself on forms and such and be constantly misgendered by my doctors because they don't recognize that non-binary is a thing. You know, I don't have another option other than to list myself as female, and they referred me as female and such. And I mean, as far as my biggest challenges within healthcare, a lot of it just boils down to, you know, doctors not really understanding my disabilities and not really believing me, especially when I first started experiencing lupus. It took years to get properly diagnosed because, you know, since I was perceived as female, basically there's this kind of perpetuating idea within healthcare that anyone who is assigned female at birth is just crazy. Yep. You know, and if they can't identify the problem right away, it's, oh, they must be just crazy. Like, I literally had doctors telling me that my pain was all in my head. Even though, you know, I was also having fevers and rashes, that's not in my head, that's something tangible.
Yeah.
And even within mental health as well, like, you know, I've got things like bipolar disorder and borderline personality disorder, which a lot of doctors either they think they're exaggerated or made up, or they have these preconceived notions about it. Like, I've had mental health workers try and tell me, oh, you can't possibly have BPD because you're not violent and psychotic and yelling all the time. And I'm like, that's not even what it is, you know?
Yeah, I have, bef- before all of this, I had the diagnosis of complex PTSD, severe depression and anxiety. And since this starting, my PTSD has gotten way out of hand. I am absolutely terrified to leave my apartment. And my seizures, it's hard to explain, because there's not misfiring in my brain. It's just my brain sending the wrong signals of what to do to the rest of my body. There's no right way to explain the type of seizures that I have, because it isn't epilepsy. And that's what a lot of paramedics don't understand. And so they think that it's all fake because it's not epilepsy.
Yeah, and I have a friend with a similar condition who's also had the same problem. I remember once having to go to the hospital with her because she started having a seizure at the mall that was, you know, triggered by her PTSD. And, you know, she wanted me by her because she was worried that the paramedics wouldn't believe her because of the fact that, you know, she has seizures, but it's not epilepsy. And so she wanted a friend there, you know, to basically back her up and support her.
So, Carter, when you were telling us your story earlier, you mentioned, and I also read in the report that I received about your story before we started the interview, that you've been physically and verbally abused by paramedics for 2 years now. And part of what you explained was that they misread your condition, and they do things that are completely inappropriate. I'd like to know a couple of things. One is, what are they doing specifically that is so physically and verbally abusive? And can you also talk about how your identity as a trans or non-binary person feeds into the way in which they misrespect you?
Yeah, so I'm gonna go all the way back to the beginning. I started having seizures at Smirk, and the paramedics would be called because their policy is whenever someone has any sort of seizure, because there are a lot of different seizures, to call paramedics, to call 911. And paramedics would come into this, you know, gender safe space, and they would purposely misgender me, and they would use she, her pronouns, and they would also call me by my dead name. And they would often say, oh, it's just for legal purposes, but you just need that for paperwork. You don't need that to talk to me and to talk to other people, other paramedics, about me and what's going on in this situation. And then they...
Could I stop you right there so we could kind of address that point more thoroughly? So you brought up something that's just a huge issue for all kinds of trans folks and non-binary folks, and that's that there's a paper record of someone's identity, and sometimes they will use the excuse that there's some sort of paper record that had either your dead name or the incorrect gender marker on you as a way to continue to refer to you that way. And by doing that, it continues to traumatize and to, you know, to misidentify people who have worked so hard to get to where they are. They don't understand how much courage it takes and how much inner resolve it takes just to get to the point where we are as trans and non-binary people. And to have something in the record that's not really accurate being put out, I mean, and then you're in the middle of a medical crisis. That's just so frustrating. Is that part
of... Yeah, and it's also something that just doesn't really make any sense, because it's not like they refer to married women by their maiden names. Why should they refer to us by our dead names?
Exactly.
And Nicolette, you mentioned that you've had the same experience too as a non-binary person when you've had to have interactions with the medical establishment, also being misgendered because they will not provide a non-binary option. And I don't know if you met, do you have a dead name, or do they dead name you also?
So I do technically have a dead name, but it's not my legal name, my birth name. Because my dead name is actually the nickname that everyone called me growing up. So I'm very, very lucky that the name that's causing me dysphoria is one that, you know, isn't on my medical records or anything. It's just the only people I ever have to worry about dead naming me are like family members who called me that growing up. But yeah, I have, like I said, had to deal with being referred to as she and being referred to as female, because that's what it says in my medical records, and they don't give me an option usually to say that I'm non-binary. I was really relieved when I went to get my COVID shot, and on the vaccine form, they list M, F, or X for your gender. You know, you can list whichever gender you want. So I was like, oh, cool, I can put X. And then there's a totally different box for sex. So, you know, if there's people that are worried about, oh, they're asking for your sex, not your gender, that's a completely different box. So I can still tell them what my assigned sex is and put the actual correct gender for myself. I was really glad that I could do that.
Yeah, for me, I don't have a problem telling people that I am non-binary. I don't have a problem telling people I was assigned female at birth, because the only way, in my opinion, to be able to like have these like really important conversations is for them to understand like the full transition, at least with me, so that they understand, you know, this is what I was, this is who I am now. And in high school, and within the few months of out of high school, because I graduated at 16, so from June 2018 to March 2019, I was doing advocacy through outdoor school, the outdoor school program for sixth graders, and they changed the way that they write like gender on the forms after I like came out as a student leader for them, and that's when they put down MFX on their paperwork, because that's when they realized that there are non-binary leaders that want to help and participate, but they are very scared of having to choose one or the other.
Carter, can I ask you a question? Did when you had that experience with the paramedics at SMRC, did anyone at SMRC, any volunteers or staff people at SMRC, attempt to correct the paramedics?
All the time, every single time. My favorite staff member, who ended up leaving SMRC, their name is Dee Dee Willis, and they helped advocate for me so much, especially in the beginning. I would cry for like 30 minutes after these interactions, because I had no control over what these paramedics were saying to me, what they were doing to me. I was very confused about the whole process. And so they would also help educate these paramedics, and there's a time where you have to be very, very firm with medical professionals about, you need to stop doing this. This is causing harm. And that's what Dee Dee did, is they would educate these paramedics, and these paramedics were not receptive.
Thank you. You mentioned that you've had to file 2 police reports this year. Can you tell us a little bit about what led up to the need to file those police reports?
Yeah, so I am in a wheelchair, and the first time I had a seizure, and a neighbor had lowered me to the ground, and paramedics came, and they were just telling me, you need to get up, and I have dystonia. So the way that my brain processes information it sends the wrong signals to my body. So if I tell my body, you know, you need to get up right now, my body was went into a statue sort of state. And these paramedics know me. There's a care plan with the county, which it has all sorts of problems with that. But these paramedics had started hitting my legs, and I have extreme nerve pain, especially to the touch of my lower legs, and sometimes my upper legs too. But the majority of the touch that I experienced, like really bad pain with, is to my lower legs. And so they were hitting my legs, trying to tell me to just get up. And then my legs were twisted because of my dystonia, which is nothing that I can control either. And they were trying to untwist my legs without my permission. So they were touching my body without my permission, and I had no way to communicate except for like yelps of pain. Like I was in pain, I was in distress. So they knew I was in distress. I was yelping in pain. I was crying. I couldn't move my hands or my arms. I could not move my legs at all. And when people try to pick me up, and this has happened multiple times doing like physical therapy and going to doctors, so people will try to see if I can stand and if I can do any weight bearing, and my legs will cross, my feet will bend in and they will cross, and that's nothing I have any control over. And these paramedics had picked me up, and they were like, you need to stand on your feet, you need to stand on your feet. And because I wasn't standing on my feet, they had let go, and I had fallen because I couldn't stand. And they left a very big bruise on my thigh because I had fallen on the metal part of my wheelchair. And then they tried to pick me back up because, again, I couldn't stand. And they put me in my wheelchair, and then they started twisting my legs again, even though my legs were already on the footrests, but it wasn't an acceptable way that they viewed what my body should look like.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
And then, again, without my permission, they had just wheeled me back into my apartment building. I was outside in the courtyard. I was walking my dog. And they wheeled me back inside. And once we got away from people, they started saying how I was a waste of their time, how I am a waste of emergency medical services, and that I need to quit this seizure. Quit the seizure, like the faking of seizures, like this seizure activity, and all the way to my apartment. and they didn't know what apartment I lived in. So they were just wheeling me around my apartment building, and I couldn't talk. I couldn't communicate. I could barely, the most I could do was I could move my arms this way. Like, I couldn't use my hands. My hands were, completely, balled in with fists because of my dystonia. And they had just wheeled me all around until I could, finally stutter my apartment number. And they brought me into my apartment and, again, had said, you know, we better not see you again. Like, you need to quit this. They literally just said, you need to quit this. And I'm like, quit what? And then they just left while I was in this. Yeah, so they wheeled me into the apartment and they left me. They just wheeled me in and had said, you need to quit this out. And left. And I had no control over my body. And when this happens at home, I'm typically in my bed where I'm in a safe environment so that if I were to have a seizure, I were to have it as safe as possible. And my seizures, they make me throw up. They make me have incontinence. They make me stop breathing. And so that can be very, very scary. So I have to stay on my side for most of the day, or shift my body to this side. And if I can feel a seizure coming on, I especially have to do that in case I do throw up and I'm very scared and I'm like, well, I don't know what I should do because my doctors also haven't told me what to do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that story. Do you think that your identity as a trans or non-binary person feeds into, I'm sorry to ask you to even think about the state of mind of the people who have abused you, but I am going to ask, do you think that your identity as a trans or non-binary person feeds into the way in which they mistreat you?
I think it is my identity, but also that I was homeless and that I didn't have any family support. Because I do know other people with my condition who have family support and have never been treated this way.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of trans and non-binary folks who do experience homelessness at various times during their before, during, and after their transition. And oftentimes, houselessness is a condition which is specifically related to being trans and non-binary.
Yeah.
Because it's hard for people who are trans and non-binary to find jobs where they're accepted and where they're welcomed. They also have to deal with all of the crippling things that come from gender dysphoria in our society and cause people to feel depressed because of the depression and because of the harassment. It sounds like you're definitely being mistreated by these paramedics.
And yeah. Another thing too is it's also very, unfortunately, very common for a lot of trans and non-binary people to not have family support if they have transphobic family members and such. That's another thing Carter was talking about is, you know, it may be different for people who have a lot of family support, but if you don't have a supportive family, that just leaves you even more vulnerable.
Carter, what I don't want to put you in the position of being an advocate, because I also recognize that you're a victim. If you do feel up to talking from the perspective of advocacy, could you tell us what needs to happen to change things? What needs to happen for trans non-binary youth? What does our community need to do to right this experience and to make things better for all trans and non-binary youth, especially those that are experiencing homelessness?
Yeah, so when it comes to training, I actually have a friend who works for AMR, who he is transgender himself, and he puts together trainings and goes to these other other companies, other organizations, to give them trainings on how to care for trans individuals. And I also know that there needs to be more training regarding that, and there also needs to be more training regarding chronic illnesses and disabling conditions when it comes to paramedics. They need to understand that we don't have a choice. I have never called 911 for my seizures, and I have had probably over 100-200 911 calls. But I have never placed a 911 call about my seizures.
Yeah, you mentioned in your report most of the 911 calls come from concerned bystanders. Which they should do if you're having a crisis and you can't ask for help.
Yeah, and it's a very gray area, because I do have this often. I do have this multiple times a day while I'm in my apartment, and I can't even imagine the times where I'm having these seizures in my apartment, and 911 needs to be called, and I do need to be transported to the hospital because of lack of oxygen or anything like that. But because when you have a seizure, when you come out of the seizure, you're very confused and you don't know what's going on, because your brain just did a full factory reset. So even if I needed care, I wouldn't know I needed care.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just completely unbelievable that you know, the emergency dispatch people would say that you're a waste of time, or that, you know, this experience which you're having and people are calling 911 because they're obviously concerned about you, that they would respond in any way other than just, you know, the utmost of compassion and concern for what you're experiencing.
I mean, I think that there's just a lot to unpack here, essentially, with you know, what we can do about basically training healthcare workers in general about how to work with trans and non-binary people, and just how to treat disabled people in general with much more respect. Because, you know, it really just sounds like these healthcare workers that you're talking about, they essentially see you as an object, not even as a person. And I think that's something that both trans and disabled people alike experience, is sort of, you know, not even being viewed as a person, but as some sort of freak or some sort of object, and not even really valid.
Yeah, so I have called supervisors. I have called both supervisors of the fire department, and I've called both supervisors of an ambulance company. And then there is something called, and they get involved when there are, I think, like, six or more 911 calls, and in about 6 months. So they get involved when someone has a lot of 911 calls. So they're like, what's going on? What can we do to help? And they have done nothing. They have not been supportive of me at all. They put together this care plan, which states a wrong diagnosis, and they made it a point to put that I have PTSD and depression on this care plan, but no other medical information, but made it a point to put that I have mental health problems. And then when I had called them to update this care plan, because it had not been updated since 2019, I've tried to update it a few times since then, but they haven't. They tell me I need to go to my doctor, and then my doctor has to send all this new information to the caseworker, and then that caseworker has to send it to the head medical doctor of the county. So with all of these steps in place, in May, I went to my doctor. I told them all the information to put in this care plan. We sent it over, but my doctor didn't think it was necessary to put that I'm in a wheelchair and that I cannot walk. They don't find that medically necessary.
Carter, you also mentioned in your report that I received before this interview that sometimes you're also inappropriately medicated. Can you talk about that?
Yes. I am allergic to the one anti-seizure medication that the paramedics have. The hospital has other medications that they can give me once I'm there, but this medication stops seizures. It is used for intubation, so it is used to put people to sleep so that they can put a tube down your throat, and then it can also be used to calm people down. And I will be having panic attacks because paramedics are there, because I am now very scared of paramedics, so I will start having these panic attacks, and because I'm not cooperating with them, they will just shoot me with medication. They will just hold me down and stab me with medication that I am allergic to, knowing I'm allergic to. That is also stated in this previous care plan.
Thank you. And you mentioned in your report you've been experiencing these various forms of abuse for almost 2 years now, and then at this point you're terrified of paramedics.
I am very scared of paramedics. My seizures have caused me to have multiple concussions. They have made me lose my speech. They have made me lose my ability to do so much. But I still want to go outside. I still want to experience life. I want to be able to just go to the grocery store, but I can't even do that without having to take medication, not because I'm scared I'm going to have a seizure, but I'm scared that paramedics will be called. I am more afraid of paramedics than I am of a head injury that could potentially kill me.
What can we as a community do to support you, Carter, and support people like you who are trans and or non-binary and are experiencing disability?
That is a very good question. The community also isn't aware of, you know, that there's multiple different types of seizures and there's multiple different kinds of disabilities. And the community, if you see someone and they're having a medical issue and it looks like, you know, they're very out of it, they don't know what's going on, try to stay and help advocate for them during those times, because what a lot of people will do is they think, oh, paramedics are here, I'm just gonna leave. Yeah, so that can put us in a very dangerous situation because there might not be any witnesses to then like go to the supervisor and like help me file like reports with these supervisors, with these companies. And so that puts us in a very dangerous situation because even if we don't want to file any complaints, we are still going to be abused by these paramedics because there's no witnesses. Mm-hmm. There's no one to keep them in check.
Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of wanted to address what Carter was talking about earlier with, you know, not having an updated care plan because they only listed, I think it was depression and PTSD. They're specifically focusing on the mental health aspects rather than like the seizures and things like that that just weren't even mentioned on the record. I think that that's important to note because I know I've definitely experienced a lot of invalidation due to my mental health. You know, once it's ever brought up that I have mental illnesses, either my other disabilities just get completely invalidated and sort of erased, or my gender identity gets invalidated. Like, you know, I was talking earlier about how, I mean, this was even before my bipolar and everything got diagnosed, but when I first started having symptoms of lupus and was going to all these doctors, they basically just told me that it was all in my head. They just assumed that I was crazy. Or, and I've known on other shows, I've also talked about in the intersection of my neurodivergence with my gender identity, you know, I've experienced things like, because of the fact that I have learning disabilities, people will try and use that against me and be like, oh, you don't even understand what gender is. You're just stupid because you have learning disabilities. Or, you know, I've mentioned I have borderline personality disorder. If that comes up, then, you know, people will just be like, oh, you're crazy. Or a specific symptom of BPD in particular is that some people with BPD can have an unstable sense of identity. They may not even really know who they are. I personally don't really experience that. That's not one of my symptoms. Like, I have a very strong sense of who I am, and my gender identity has stayed the same as I was a little kid. So, you know, that's not a BPD thing, but people will use that against me and be like, it must be your BPD that's making you confused about your gender. When I'm not confused about anything, you know, like I said, this was something that I knew long before I developed any of my mental illnesses. I guess I would definitely like to address this sort of intersection between mental health and gender identity, because I think and disabilities in general too, because I think that that is something very important to note, is with the invalidation that comes with, you know, having any sort of mental health disorders in general. What do you think, Carter?
Yeah, when I first started having seizures, and I hate this word and it's a very triggering word, but it needs to be known why this word is an inappropriate word. Paramedics and doctors, they would use the word pseudo-seizure. And what that means is fake seizure, but it's not fake. It is very real. It is very scary, and it can cause very much harm to people. And so what needs to be changed is there a way of viewing my medical condition, which is functional neurological disorder, which is what causes my seizures, which is just this miscommunication in my brain. My brain just doesn't know how to communicate with the rest of my body. And so it is seen as fake. It is seen as a mental health disorder, and it's not. It is a neurological condition and has been proven to be a neurological condition, though it's not epilepsy. You wouldn't tell someone who just had a diabetic seizure that their seizure was fake. That's not epilepsy. So it's this harm in these certain words that medical professionals are using. And during my last hospital stay, every time I had seen a new nurse, I had said, "This is what my seizures are. Do not use this language." And this nurse refused and continued to use that word. And that's a very, very triggering word for me now, because of the harm that it has done to me and to my identity. To the point where I started having a horrible panic attack, because my body couldn't handle the stress of this word that was triggering me.
So one of the areas that in this conversation that we were just having, Nicolette mentioned and you're also talking about how medical professionals categorize you, and how that categorization is inappropriate. And in the medical literature that I was looking at before we began the interview today, I was reading how there's this tendency within the medical profession to overlay disability and gender identity. So there's a couple of ways in which this can play out in a really bad way. One is that medical professionals can read gender identity as a triggering source of information for disability, and they can because they're reading one thing as something that they either question or don't really understand, then they read disability in the same way. And there's also theories within the community of how people who are supporting people with disabilities and who also have gender identity, they will construct theories about how these two are related, and which don't have any truth to them, and is not based on any kind of empirical studies. So it sounds like within the medical establishment, there are issues that are specifically related to the intersection of gender identity and disability that still needs to be better understood within the medical profession, in addition to just creating better standards of care for treatment for people such as yourself, Carter.
It's rough, because for me, I have no choice but to be my own advocate, and I so badly wish that I had more support when it comes to my health, because my family, they do just believe that this is a mental health condition because of the way that doctors had told them, again, when I was 17. Mm-hmm. And they just don't understand many different conditions if they've never heard of it. If they've never heard of if doctors just haven't heard of a condition, they're like, "Oh, well, let me Google it." But Google isn't the best option. Like, the best option is to really ask, what do you experience when it comes to your disability? Like, what are your symptoms? How should I care for you? And let me talk to people who are also educated in your disability.
Yeah, client-centered, people first. Yeah. We're talking tonight with Carter Lee. Carter has been telling us their story regarding being discriminated against and abused, both physically and verbally, as a disabled trans or non-binary person who's experiencing homelessness. Carter, if people would like to find out more about your story, or if they want to reach out to you, is there a way in which people can reach out to you?
people can reach out to me over Facebook. My name is just Carter Lee. There's a lot of pictures of my dog and my cat and my guinea pig. And so yeah, people can reach out to me over Facebook. And then yeah, if I see people out in the community, I'm fine with them like stopping me and asking questions, because that's the only way that people truly get to learn is to ask questions, and I am very open about everything.
Nicolette, is there more that you'd like to add to the conversation?
I mean, there's so much I do want to talk about that I don't even know if we have time for, because there's just so many overlapping issues related to this. I mean, we've talked so much about, you know, the physical abuse by mental or health workers, the verbal abuse by health workers, the misgendering, and I've also talked to you, you know, about invalidation for validation of my gender identity and validation of my disabilities, experience both. You know, another thing I think is important to address is the concept of invisible disabilities. I mean, you know, Carter, yours may be actually more visible than mine, because seizures are a very visible thing, but like you said, your seizures are often invalidated and called fake, basically. You know, because, you know, people might not be able to tell that you're disabled looking at you, even if they're seeing you have a seizure, apparently, which I just find so odd. And I know I've definitely had to deal a lot with people believing that my disabilities are fake. I mean, just yesterday I got the news that once again my application for SSI got denied, and I've been fighting for this for 5 years now, because it basically comes down to the judges refuse to believe that my disabilities even exist or are as disabling as I say they are, because, you know, they look at me and I look like a normal person to them. They can't see that I'm actually suffering with a lot of disabilities and a lot of symptoms, and it's affecting my everyday life. You know, I don't go a single day without my disabilities affecting me in some way and impairing my day in some way. This is a reality that I think so many people are refusing to accept, that they can't see a person's visibility or disability visibly. You know, they think that you need to look deformed or look blind, I guess, in order for you to be valid to them.
I in 2019 had started using a walker to help me walk, because I was having these head injuries and I was having like loss of balance, and then after my seizures, it was very hard to relearn how to walk, and so I started using a walker, and then like I lost full usage of my legs, and I am now in a wheelchair, and not only have paramedics, you know, like assaulted me regarding like the use of my legs, but they have also refused to transport my wheelchair to the hospital if they are forcing me to go to the hospital.
Well, thank you, Carter. I think that based on what I'm hearing from you, Carter, as well as you, Nicolette, it sounds like we're going to need to do another show on this topic. And maybe we can put together a panel of folks who are trans or non-binary and or experiencing some sort of disability. It would be great if our panel also was really focused on trans youth and folks experiencing houselessness. So, Carter, we will work on putting together a panel for later on this year, and I hope that you can join us for that panel.
Absolutely. I would love to.
And I can help with putting that panel together as well, because I know an awful lot of people who are trans or non-binary and disabled. I mean, this is such a common intersection, I think, and it's so important for us to bring together all the voices that we can to address these issues.
Well, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's really been eye-opening to get to hear your story, Carter, and also to hear more of your story, Nicolette.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for letting me, you know, like, get this out there that, like, this is actively happening and has been happening for many years.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here and sharing your story, Carter. And I do hope to hear more of your story in the future.
Hi, this is Emma. We just have a couple of minutes left, and so I thought I'd share some transgender news, what's been going on in the news lately for trans folks. In the military, transgender soldiers can openly serve in the Army now, and the Army will provide for gender transition care and surgery for transgender soldiers, according to military.com. They say a soldier's gender identity will no longer be a case for involuntary separation, denied reenlistment, or other adverse action, according to a memo. The Army's policy follows President Biden's executive order on his first week of office in January, repealing the Trump-era ban on transgender troops. So that was a big deal. Also, the Supreme Court declined an appeal for... there was a transgender student who won a bathroom suit, and the Supreme Court basically let the decision stay, meaning that they're not going to listen to any challenges to it. And what it says in the BBC is that the justices let stand a lower court ruling that a Virginia school had been discriminating by barring a transgender student from using the bathroom. The decision marks the end of a 6-year battle by Gavin Grimm. And a fact sheet from the White House says the Biden-Harris administration advances equality for transgender Americans. On the last day of Pride Month, which was June 30th, they basically issued a memo talking about how every American deserves to live with dignity, safety, and opportunity, and it's important for White House policies to support that. So this is really exciting. A lot of good news. And for people who care about this, 2021 Miss Nevada will be the first openly transgender Miss USA contestant. So for people who care about this aspect of the binary that supports misogyny and reinforces stereotypes about women and women's bodies, the Miss Nevada contestant will be openly transgender, and that's actually a really big step forward for trans women to be included in this sort of thing. So anyways, that's the transgender news. Thanks so much for listening to Trans Positive, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
haunted. I'm inside my eyes, dream of bedroom surprise. They call it climbing, and I call it visibility.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.